You ready for Basecamp Fitness's best deal yet? 7 days for $7. That's right, 7 days for $7. It's time to double down on your fitness goals and snag this offer before it's gone. Call or text Basecamp Fitness at 913-232-9770 or go to basecampfitness.com to learn more.
This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's more of my Saturday vibe. It's good stuff to get into hour number two. We've got 3 hours total today. Just wrapped up with Seth Kaiser from The Athletic talking Kansas City Chiefs with training camp opening up next week? Just a few days from now. So we'll be out there with complete coverage every day. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John basically lives in St. Joe during training camp at the Stony Creek Inn. And I will be there for a couple of weekends, also staying at the Stony Creek Inn, but I'll be doing my thing. I'll be doing my shows. Steven loves it up there because his kids can come up. They got a great indoor swimming pool and a hot tub. It's a great hotel.
Well, he also lives in the Northland, so it's probably not a terrible drive.
No.
It's takes just up I-29.
Takes me about an hour, I think.
Yeah.
About an hour. But the Stony Creek Inn is awesome. So if you're going up there and you plan to stay for a couple of days, Stony Creek Inn, highly recommended by me. So Seth Kaiser, we wrapped up. Hopefully we'll see him up in St. Joe. In the 11 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Matt Galloway from CJOnline.com and HawkZone.com. We'll talk KU with Les Miles getting ready to start his tenure as the Kansas football coach here in a couple of weeks. And then some of the basketball alumni are having pretty good stretches in the NBA Summer League. Right now, though, I want to talk a little Royals baseball with Max Reaper from Royals Review, editor-in-chief. First time we've had on the show. Max, how are you on this Saturday morning?
I'm doing good, Brad. Thanks for having me on, and I hope you're able to celebrate Bubba Starling's Major League debut with your friends and family and enjoy it. So.
It's going to go from Bubba Day to Bubba Weekend. The timing worked out perfect to call him up because there's, the All-Star break is over. This team is not going anywhere. There's not a lot of excitement. But, hey, you got a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You're probably going to see Bubba Starling play all three games.
Well, yeah, and give credit to the marketing department for kind of getting out ahead of this one. And they announced the transaction on Thursday, so that allowed, I think, a lot of Royals fans to make plans for this weekend to come see Bubba. And it sounds like they had 4,000 walk-ups on a Friday night to come see Bubba Starling play, 25,000 fans overall, which pretty good night considering this team is kind of, several games back in the standings and completely out of contention this year. So, I'm sure the Royals don't mind that. But really a cool scene to see him get a standing ovation from his hometown team, the hometown fans. And, really a great moment for him considering all that he's gone through, all the setbacks that he's had in his career, and to see him finally get to the big leagues. I think that was a really cool moment for a lot of Royals fans, and I'm sure especially for Bubba Starling.
Yeah. And, I was trying to think back. The standing ovation was awesome. I think that was a great way for Kansas City to welcome him to the big leagues after 7.5 years in the minors. I was trying to think back. I don't remember Hosmer and Moustakas if they got the standing O. They probably did because they were known commodities well before they got to the majors. And with the social media and all that, you could follow them on their path. The last big one I remember, of course, was Alex Gordon. It was the opening day crowd. He came up, bases were loaded, and of course, he struck out, but it was good to see for Bubba and his family to get that standing O last night. Well deserved after a hard trudge through the minors, struggling at the plate, injury after injury after injury. So it was a great scene last night.
Yeah, and I think in Kansas City, I think we, especially being a small market team, I think we kind of anticipate these kind of debuts a little bit more. I mean, I remember Alex Gordon debut and how much hype we had for that. I remember I was at Billy Butler's debut. And believe it or not, he played left field that game.
Wow.
And I remember there was a screaming line drive out to left field. He kind of stumbled and took a step back, stuck his glove up, and the ball landed in his mitt. And, the crowd was wild. He's like, whoa, we can play left field. That's great.
Purely by accident.
Short-lived experiment.
Purely by accident. He was
right.
He was a DH and played a little first base, but I wouldn't say he played it. He was stationed at first base.
He wore a glove in the field, and that's all that really matters, right?
That's all right. Visiting with Max Reaper, RoyalsReview.com. So let's talk about Bubba's debut. I was, that first at bat, you got all the nerves going, the crowd, you got the standing ovation, and oh my gosh, this is my first time in the majors. You're facing a pitcher who's also relatively young in Turnbull. And I think it was five pitches, and a walk. I don't think Bubba ever took the bat off his shoulders, which was fine because the balls were outside the strike zone, but good approach, just not willing to give in and swing at anything in a desperation to get that first big league hit.
Yeah, I'd imagine that when you first get to the big leagues, the first thing you want to do is just swing the bat and show what you can do. So good restraint by Bubba to kind of wait for his pitch, and he did draw that walk. And yeah, I'm sure there were a lot of nerves going on, and that's kind of also the thing. I don't want to be like the negative Nancy out here, but we should probably temper our expectations for Bubba a little bit. He's not going to fix this team all of a sudden. He's not going to just tear up the league. I mean, we should understand he's a 26-year-old who's in AAA, and he's a few years removed from being considered on anyone's prospect list. He was a free agent last winter. I mean, the Royals pretty much let him go, and he was free to sign with anyone. So, credit to him for showing some loyalty and coming back with the team, and credit to the Royals for giving him another chance. But, he's a guy that anyone could have signed.
Right.
And so, he's kind of put it together. He had a great spring training. He finally, I think, really for the first time in his career, kind of put together three solid months of good play in the minor leagues. But even with that, I mean, I think people should understand that in AAA this year, they're using the Major League Baseball for the first time. And I know Commissioner Manfred can deny it all he wants, but the ball seems kind of juiced.
Yes, it is.
And so the numbers in AAA are kind of like the big leagues. They're up all over across the board. They also play in a lot of thin air environments at AAA. So his numbers have to be in Omaha. I mean, they're good, but you have to kind of take them in that context. It's nice to see him have some success. And I think also he doesn't have to hit that much really to be a valuable player because he's got that speed and defense. We saw the speed a little bit on the base paths when he came around to score on that error.
Yep.
And I think that will be an asset. And really, he doesn't have to hit that much to out-hit Billy Hamilton. I mean, he's got kind of the similar speed and defense profile, maybe not as much speed as Hamilton, but certainly enough to be a threat on the base paths. And if he can hit a little bit, if he can show a little bit of pop, I mean, that's certainly going to be an advantage over Hamilton. And he's got at least the potential to be more than some of the other players we were throwing out there in center field. So I think if nothing else, Royals fans just want to see that potential. Give him 3 months, see what he can do, and maybe you have a late bloomer like you had with Hunter Dozier, like you had with Whit Merrifield, and maybe we have something for the future here.
We're speaking with Max Reaper from RoyalsReview.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Max Reaper or at Royals Review. They post a lot of good stuff. And I'll just stick with that first plate appearance one more time with Bubba Starling. Not only draws the walk without swinging the bat, but moves around the bases. And as you said, on the wild throw, he was kind of hanging a little bit off third base watching. And as soon as the ball got away, he starts scooting to home and he scores. And for me, it was important not only that he got on base, but that he was in motion, moving around. He gets to third, he scores. And so then you feel, if you're in center field, you're out there by yourself. No matter what happens, you're kind of alone out there. But when you're on the base paths, you're moving around, you end up scoring, you're in the game. You feel like you're part of the game then.
Yeah, and he really showed good instincts on that on the base paths there to kind of be heads up and to get around on the bases on that too. So, like I said, I think his speed is going to be an asset. And he's got pretty good instincts for a ball player. I mean, he's been playing now for 7 years, so he's not kind of the raw player that we heard about when he was first drafted. So, and credit to him too for sticking to baseball. I mean, there's several points he could have given up and said, okay, that's enough. I can play college football if I really want to, and he stuck with it. So, and we're seeing kind of the culmination of that and the finished product now a little bit. So, I think being in the game. And it's really good that he wasn't, overwhelmed by the moment because we saw that standing ovation and he really could have gotten kind of lost in his own head or just, overwhelmed. But he seemed to take it all in stride, and so that's got to be pretty impressive for a lot of Royals fans.
And the nice thing for Bubba Starling and the Royals is, as soon as they made the announcement, and Ned's been talking about Bubba coming up for 4 weeks now, that it was going to happen at some point. And then when the announcement was made, Dayton Moore and Ned Yospol said he's playing every day. He's not coming up here to sit. And it's much like what they did with Nicky Lopez. When Nicky Lopez came up, it was okay. Witt is not playing second base, at least for the foreseeable future. He's going to be in right field, and I'm fine with that. And then when Nicky Lopez struggled a little bit, they gave him a day off here and a day off there to try to clear his head. But he is playing. He's not here to sit. And with Bubba Starling, they are going to do the same thing.
Yeah, and I think some of the frustration with Royals fans is, they keep asking, why aren't these guys getting called up immediately? And I think a lot of it is kind of what you talk about. The Royals want to make sure that when they come up, they're playing every day. They don't want a guy to come up and sit the bench. That's why, for a long time they said, well, Terrence Gore is a good guy to have on our bench because we don't need him to play every day. He's not really part of our future. He's just a guy that can help us, maybe steal a game or two by using his legs as a pinch runner. And so we're not going to carry a guy like Brett Phillips or Bubba Starling just to sit the bench and do that. So now they've kind of moved. And I think we're going to see this more over the next couple of weeks. We're going to see guys getting some of the veterans get slowly phased out in favor of some of these younger guys. You know, we saw it with Nicky Lopez a couple of weeks ago. They made some room for him. Bubba Starling, it seems like they're going to make room for him and slowly ease Billy Hamilton into more of a reserve role, and perhaps he'll get traded here in the next couple of weeks. I think we'll start seeing some of the Richard Lovelady could be up here in a couple of weeks. He's done really well in AAA Omaha, and certainly we could see a couple of the relievers maybe shipped out and to make room for him. And then maybe even we could even see Ryan O'Hearn come back up. Brett Phillips could, if they can find room for him somehow, he could also make his way up. But again, the problem is just finding a way to get him, to have him start, because you don't want, you already have Alex Gordon in left field. You're going to have Whit Merrifield playing a lot in right. You have Jorge Soler at DH. So where do you find the playing time for Brett Phillips? And maybe that'll work its way out. Maybe there's a trade coming, but we'll see. But I do think they're going to start slowly transitioning to this, to a younger team that has more of a forward, future-leaning development. So I know there's been a lot of frustration with Royals fans about that, but I think that's coming, and we're starting to see the beginning of that.
We're speaking with Max Reaper, the editor-in-chief for Royals Review, royalsreview.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at Max Reaper, and read his stuff at Royals Review. It's always good stuff. One more thing on this, Max. After the game, Ned Yost, or maybe before the game, was talking about how he was going to try to juggle playing time for everybody with Bubba Starling up here, and kind of threw it out that the DH would now be a rotating spot, and that it would be Alex Gordon, Whit Merrifield, and Jorge Soler rotating through that DH spot, which is fine. I just found it a little odd because Soler, I think you maybe tweeted out, one of these players is not like the other two, right?
Yeah, and I feel like they keep kind of giving lip service to Jorge Soler and his defense, but I think everyone kind of understands he's not out there for his glove. And look, they want to find as many reasons as they can to keep him in the lineup. He hit his 24th home run last night. He's obviously their best source of power right now. So sure, if he needs to play right field to stay in the lineup, I get it. But realistically, he's not going to spend much time in right, or he shouldn't spend a lot of time in right field. I think you're going to see Whit there most of the time, and Soler at DH, because he really hasn't progressed defensively like anyone thought he could. I mean, look, if Rusty Kunz can't fix you, then I don't know if anyone can really fix you defensively. So, we'll see. I'm expecting Soler to DH most of the time.
Well, I was in spring training when they acquired Jorge Soler, I guess the first time he was in spring training with the Royals, and Rusty Kunz worked with him every day. And credit Jorge Soler, he was there early, stayed late, put in the time, and he was so bad when he first got to the Royals that the slightest improvement looked like he'd come light years. And, credit Rusty Kunz, he got him to be a little bit better, but he's still not very good.
Well, and you don't like to pigeonhole a guy that young right, to be a DH, because DH is usually like a 35-year-old guy at the end of his career, kind of the big old fat guy that can't really play the field anymore. And to have a guy that young who's, presumably part of your future, to put him at a DH already, I think – you really want to avoid that. So they were kind of grasping at any kind of improvement they saw just to see if there was a chance that he could play right field. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, he's at the age where he's not really going to get much better. So, he's a DH. That's fine. I mean, there are young DHs around the big leagues these days, and he can play the outfield if needed, but I think it's a big drop off defensively when he's out in the field.
All right, Max, things to watch for in the second half. Obviously, the trade deadline is going to come up here in a couple of weeks. We assume the Royals will move one, if not more, players. Homer Bailey, I expect to be gone. He's pitched well enough over the last 4 weeks that he would be a valuable addition to, a contending ball club, whether that's long relief out of the bullpen, spot start, whatever it is. I got to think Homer Bailey would be early up and to be out of here.
Yeah, I think that the fact that any team that acquires him is paying him pretty much the league minimum, I think that's a big selling point, because you have some cost-conscious clubs that are contending right now. It seems like the Rays, the Twins, even the Brewers to an extent, they can't go out and spend, $10 million on a guy that's a rental. Homer Bailey is making, the Reds and the Dodgers are picking up pretty
yes,
much all of his contract this year. So any team that acquires him is paying the league minimum. So you can just take a flyer. I mean, he's pitched a lot better over the last couple of weeks. Overall, his numbers aren't great, but a team like the Rays could take a flyer on him. And, they're just, since they're not paying him that much, if it turns out he's not very good, they can always release him after a couple of weeks and they're not really out much money. So I think he will be an asset teams come calling. I mean, teams always need pitching. Jake Diekman's another guy, I think, that I know he hasn't pitched really well his last 10, 12 outings. I think the peripherals are still pretty good. He's the kind of guy I think a team could look at and say, well, his numbers aren't great, which means maybe we're getting him at a discount and maybe we can fix him and he can turn into a solid reliever for us. So I think those are the two names that I would most expect to move, just because teams always need pitching and teams especially need bullpen pitching. So those are two guys that can really help any team. Other than that, though, I'm kind of expecting a little bit of a quiet market for the Royals. I mean, they don't have a ton of guys that are just like, are, you know, teams are going to be pounding the door down for. You know, Martin Maldonado will probably get some calls. I mean, he got traded last year, and his offensive numbers were pretty similar to what they are this year. And it's really because of his glove, his ability to frame pitches, his arm behind the plate. So if there's a team out there that needs a catcher, I think they could come calling. And you're not going to get a great prospect for him, but you can get someone kind of interesting. I mean, he was traded last year for a guy that I think ended up being in the Angels' top 20 prospect list by MLB.com. So that's something that could help the Royals farm system for sure. And then, you know, Whit Merrifield, I think, is a name that most people say that is a guy that's going to have teams, you know, pounding the door down for. But the Royals are asking for so much for him. I think it's going to scare a lot of teams off. And, you know, we'll see. I think, you know, Dayton Moore is open to trading Whit Merrifield. But it's going to – he really wants his hand forced. He doesn't want to be seen as the guy that just traded Whit Merrifield away when he didn't have to. So, and he doesn't have to. I mean, he can hold on to Whit through the winter, through the next year, or keep him as part of the future. So the Royals have options there, and they're kind of holding the cards. And so they can kind of dictate the terms of the deal. And I would expect, the way teams are hoarding prospects, that there's not a deal out there. I think Sam Ellinger said the same thing in his notes this week, that the Royals would like to move Whit Merrifield if there's a great deal, but the deal doesn't exist. So I'm expecting a little bit of a quiet deadline, but you never know. And the Royals could be buyers of the deadline. I mean, I think the season has been such a disappointment, and they, you know, we know how much Dayton Moore cares about winning, that we could see them add a piece that they think is part of the future. A guy like, you know, last year they added Brian Goodwin, who ended up not being part of the future, but he was a guy that that had several controllable years left and had kind of fallen out of favor in Washington. I think the Royals could pick up a guy like that. Obviously, they don't want to trade top prospects for that. But if there's a guy out there that's kind of out there for not much, then I think that could be an option for them as well.
Well, if the Royals do a little bit of shopping, the position that pops into my head, which is not going to happen, would be the starting rotation, because the rotation just has not been good this year. And everybody is, you know, Brad Keller was so good last year. He was the opening day starter. He slipped back a little bit. Jacob Junis has come way back from where he was, and they've had to mix other pieces in there, you know, then move pieces out like Jorge Lopez. And I don't know why collectively as a group they've all taken a step back. But when this kind of thing happens at the big league level, fingers get pointed at your position coach. If the hitters are all struggling, batting coach has got to go. If the pitchers are all struggling, pitching coach has got to go. And there has not been a lot of heat, at least, you know, from the media circles, on Cal Eldred yet, the pitching coach. I know our friend David Leske has put some heat on him, and I think you put that in your weekend rumblings notes for this week. But that's got to be a discussion point, because this group collectively has just stunk out loud this season.
Yeah, and I think some of the reason that you haven't seen a whole lot of outcry, at least from the media, I guess, is you know, look what he has to deal with. You know, he's not dealing with a ton of guys that are like top prospects. I mean, the Jorge Lopez was a 26-year-old the Brewers found expendable enough to include in a trade. You know, Keller and June Keller was a guy that the Diamondbacks didn't even see fit to protect from the Rule 5 draft. Junis was a nice, you know, minor league pitcher, but he was never on any top prospect list. So, you know, not saying that those guys aren't good, but, you know, I think a lot of people just see the expectation was, okay, you've got some guys that maybe have some potential, but it's not like these guys were just on the verge of being all-stars or anything. So I think there's a little bit of a pass for that. I think there's a little bit of a pass in that it was a rebuilding season. But I think you're right. I think the more regression we've seen, and the fact that really no one on this pitching staff other than Ian Kennedy has taken a step forward this year, and he's your $16.5 million 34-year-old guy who's not part of the future, so that doesn't really do them much good. So I think there will be more and more calls. I mean, Leske, like you said, he was calling for Eldred to be – he's about at the point where he wants to see Eldred gone. And he also mentioned that he's hearing that Eldred is a little bit critical or mocking of some of the more modern analytical ways of evaluating players, which if that is true, that would be quite troubling, because I think the Royals should be using every tool in their toolbox to improve their pitchers, and obviously if they're not using that kind of stuff, then and getting these kind of results, I should tell them that maybe they should give that stuff a try. So yeah, I'm a little concerned. I want to keep an eye on it. I've always been a little wary of blaming like all the pitching problems on the pitching coach. I mean, it's, like in football, the defensive coordinator schemes everything and calls the plays, and you can put a lot more of the responsibility on a Bob Sutton that's controlling the defense. But in baseball, it's a little bit different. I mean, like Cal Eldred's not calling the pitches. He's not throwing the pitches out there for the guys. He's he's working with guys on their grips. He's working with guys on their mechanics. Some guys are already pretty set in their ways, and some guys aren't going to change. And so he's going to kind of deal with what he's got. So I'm not at the point where I'm saying it's time for Eldred to go, but certainly what I'm hearing is not great. And if they don't get results, soon, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Royals to maybe make a change, if nothing more than just to have a scapegoat for back-to-back really disappointing seasons.
Well, yeah, we've seen the Royals in the past fire hitting coaches like it's a bodily function. And I stole that line from Seinfeld, by the way. So it's the nature of the beast in baseball, and I get it. You mentioned Ian Kennedy, and look, he's got a huge contract, but the way he's pitching, I would like to think he would be a valuable trade piece, but I can't see a team wanting to take on that kind of money, or the Royals willing to eat that much money, even though it's already spent. There's nothing you can do about it. That money's right. Not coming back, but maybe Ian Kennedy's a piece somewhere?
Yeah, that'll be a really interesting test on ownership, I think, to see how committed are they to the rebuild, because you're right. He's on just the face of it, he could help a lot of teams, right? He's an ERA of 3.10. He's done a pretty good job as a closer. He could be a solid seventh or eighth minute, inning reliever for a lot of contenders. Maybe even step in as a closer if they need it. He's been pretty solid. I mean, his strikeout rate's gone up. His velocity's up. He's pretty much done everything you've asked him to do. The problem is that $16.5 million salary for next year. And if the ownership is really committed to this rebuild, they need to eat that money. They need, and like you said, it's a sunk cost. They have to pay that to Ian Kennedy no matter what. So why not use that as a way of getting a prospect, getting a long-term player that can help you win down the road? And we haven't seen the Royals make that kind of commitment and be willing to eat that much money. I think the closest maybe is Omar Infante when they let him go completely,
right,
with a year and a half left on his deal. It wasn't even that much money. And I don't believe it was $16.5 million, but at least they were able to eat that money just because he was kind of forced their hand with his play. But we haven't seen them at least eat money, that much money in a trade where they're basically paying another team to have a player and to get some cheaper, cheaper younger players in return. So I'll be really interested to see if they are willing to do that. I'd be very surprised if they do. You never know. Teams are going to come calling for Ian Kennedy for sure. And if the Royals can work out the financials, then they could have a pretty valuable trade asset on their hands.
We're speaking with Max Reaper from RoyalsReview.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at Max Reaper. And let me spell it for you, because Reaper can be spelled a number of different ways. It's Max and then R-I-E-P-E-R, at Max Reaper. And also read all the good stuff at Royals Review. Final thing for you, and this has nothing to do with baseball, but I'm sure you were following Twitter last night. And this one particular tweet was making the circles that everybody was responding to, and it had to do with Serena Williams, who ended up losing in the Wimbledon finals this morning. That's already over. But this tweet going around said they took a survey, and 1 in 8 men believe they can score a point off Serena Williams. That's 12% of men think they could score a point off Serena Williams. Look, I thought Shane Summers, who runs the 2-6 show during the weeks here, had the best response. He said, "I'm pretty sure the only movement I'm making against a Serena serve is a bowel movement." And my response was, "The only way I would even return a serve is from a purely defensive position where I'm protecting myself with the racket and I get a lucky deflection. Otherwise, no way in hell." So, Max, I'll put it to you. Are you one of the 12% that think you could score a point on Serena Williams, or are you with the other 88% who say no way?
So I've played a little tennis, everyone, once in a while, and my wife played high school tennis, and she can whip me pretty easily. So I imagine that Serena Williams is like way better than my wife, and I can't imagine I could even return a serve on her. And I know some people are like, well, what if she double faults? You know, I'm pretty sure she could take a little bit. She doesn't have to serve it quite as hard as she does at Wimbledon and still, you know, get it over the net and without fault double faulting and still be able to win me. So I don't think I would get a single point against her. No. I'm not in that 12% for sure.
I would just like to meet one of these men in that 12% and ask him, did you play in college? Were you a junior superstar? I mean, what makes you believe that? Because if you're just a weekend guy going out to the racket club, you got no chance. Sorry.
I would love that kind of confidence, man. I need that kind of confidence in my life to think I could get a point off Serena Williams, but I don't have that right now.
No, I'm not even, like I said, the only way I would even return it is from I'd be crouching and holding the racket in front of my face and hope for a lucky deflection. That's it. That's it. And even then, I'm not going to score the point. That would be a win in my book. Hey, Max, I appreciate you taking time to jump on the show. First time on here. I'm sure we'll have you back. That was awesome stuff, and if you're going out to the ballpark, enjoy seeing Bubba Starling in a Major League Royals uniform.
Yeah, it's great to be on, Brad. Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. That is Max Rieper from RoyalsReview.com. Again, follow him on Twitter, at Max Rieper, R-I-E-P-E-R. Also, you can read his stuff at Royals Review or online, RoyalsReview.com. Good stuff, Chris. First time we had him on the show. That's really good stuff.
Yeah, he does good work.
Yeah. And they also do a good job of Royals Review with collecting things from like other news outlets. Like they'll take a snippet of Lynn Worthy's article from the Kansas City Star with a link to it, or David Leske and what he's writing and put a link to it, and all kinds of good stuff. And they do I like the weekend rumblings, because during the week sometimes I get behind on stuff, but the weekend rumblings kind of gives you a capsule of things that happened during the week and what you can expect this weekend. So awesome stuff. Excited. Bubba Starling in Kansas City, wearing a Royals uniform. On that note, we'll take a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810, WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest, cranking out those 50,000 watts. You can listen worldwide by getting the app at 810WHB.com. It's going to be another steamy day here in Kansas City, but that's what we expect. It's July. By the way, just wrapping up a thought from our last segment, Max Rieper from RoyalsReview.com. Good stuff, by the way. Max was awesome. We finished by asking if you think you could return or score a point off Serena Williams. And one out of eight men think they could, 12%, which is crap. You're not going to. So Serena lost this morning to Simona Halep, straight sets. And somebody from Fox Sports Radio named Jason McIntyre, I don't know who he is.
He's the big lead. You know what the big lead is?
Oh,
He was the creator of that.
Okay, so he tweeted out, Serena Williams now just 2-5 in her last seven Grand Slam finals. Very strange. Just got destroyed by Halep, who Serena was 9-1 against in her career. To which Doug Gottlieb responded, she's 37 years old. You going to make a big deal about Serena getting swept by someone half her age, for crying out loud? Come
Dude,
on.
Been off. Mowing through the tournament.
Yes.
She was phenomenal.
She was
in
destroying people.
Yes.
She lost the finals. She's 37. She lost the finals. Good God, grow up. That's one of those... See, I shouldn't even read it, because that's just bait being thrown out. That's just red meat being thrown out. Hope you're proud of yourself. Chris, do you think you could score a point, Serena Williams?
No.
No.
Probably not.
No way.
I'm not. I mean, I'm decent at moving on the tennis court. Like, when I was in shape in high school, like,
right.
I like to play tennis in the summer just to as an activity. I thought it was fun, but my serve, not great.
No.
Not good.
I would take your average dude, if you're one of the 12% that think you could score on Serena Williams and you happen to live in Kansas City, why don't you go down to UMKC and take on somebody from the women's tennis team over there? I doubt you could return one off one of their players. I doubt it. I don't think I would.
No, and when Serena's like full on like serving well, it's going sometimes 115 miles per hour, 110.
Yeah, no
I'm like, nah.
No. We had a guy years ago, and I'll just finish up this thought real quick. years ago, in the TV studio at Metro Sports, we had a women's boxer in there, Mary Ortega. She's famous in Kansas City boxing circles. She's a champion. She's awesome. And so, you know, she's not that big. She's 5'1", but she's tough as hell and beat up a lot of people. So she came in the studio and we did this great interview. And somebody I used to work with, he was gone a long time ago. He said, you know, if I train for like 6 or 8 weeks, I bet I could beat her. And I'm like, are you kidding me? One, you're overweight and out of shape. And he's like, oh, I could work it off. I'll get in shape. And I said, two, Mary Ortega probably trains 8 to 12 hours a day specifically to beat people up in a boxing ring. She's running miles out on the pavement. She trains to destroy people. And this guy thought he could take 6 and 8 weeks, you know, a little bit of training and beat her. I'm like, no. She would pummel. You wouldn't last probably 30 seconds unless you just ran around the ring, in which case you're out of energy. You're not going to last a round. No, sorry. Put your ego in check. All right, one more baseball note as we wrapped up with Max Reaper. The Angels last night, it was their first home game since the passing of Tyler Skaggs. And every member of the Angels was wearing a Skaggs jersey with the number 45 on it. Terrific tribute, okay? This is the second time in 10 years the Angels have had to deal with a midseason death of a teammate. It was Nick Adenhart about 10 years ago. So the Angels organization has had this happen a couple of times. So all the teammates are out there, number 45 jerseys. They all say Skaggs on the back. His mom, Diana, is there. And God bless her. I don't know if I could do this, you know, just a few days after your son passes away. But Diana, his mom, was out on the mound to throw out the first pitch. Perfect strike. And that's hard to do. First of all, you're dealing with your emotions. And second of all, you're on, you know, how many times? I doubt she's thrown out first pitches many times in her life. So she throws a perfect strike. Great. Sets the tone. Angels come out in the first inning. They put 6 runs on the board. They're just blasting balls out of the ballpark. I'm like, this will be a good little story. The Angels are going to win their first home game since the passing of Tyler Skaggs, and they're all wearing Skaggs jerseys. This will be a great story. Well, then the game keeps going. About the sixth inning, start to see tweets. Turn on the Angels game if you're not watching. Find a place to follow the Angels game if you're not watching. Angels got a no-hitter rolling. This could happen. Again, it's early in the game. You're not really sure. Then in the seventh and eighth innings, there were a couple of dicey plays. Could have easily ended the no-hitter. You had a couple of diving plays on the infield, a couple of challenging catches in the outfield, and you're like, okay, this seriously might happen. A no-hitter. And this is two pitchers combining. This was Taylor Cole and Felix Pena. So it would be a combined no-hitter if they were able to do it. You get the ninth inning. There's one out. There's two outs. The final play, ground ball in the infield, and the throw is a low throw to first base in the dirt. Picked it out to finish off a combined no-hitter for Taylor Cole and Felix Pena. And all the Angels come running in, and they're crying, and they're jumping up and down. And then they start taking off their Skaggs jerseys, and every one of them lays them down on the mound, all next to each other. And you know what? There's not a lot of things I get sappy for in sports. In life I do, but in sports, I mean, come on. That hit you right in the heartstrings.
I mean, that was a life moment. Like, that's...
Yes.
That's bigger than the game. That's bigger than baseball.
Yeah.
I mean...
And look, I don't know Tyler Skaggs. Never interviewed the man. I don't know him. It wouldn't matter if I'd interviewed him because I still wouldn't know him. But at, you know, 27 years old, lose your life. That it impacts your family. It impacts your teammates. It impacts your coaches, your front office, the fans in Anaheim, I'm sure. And here's one more little thing for you about this. Not only do they get the combined no-hitter, the first home game back, when they're all wearing Tyler Skaggs jerseys, today would have been his 28th birthday. So, look, I'm not going to get preachy about this. I don't know if you believe, whether you believe in God, if you don't believe in God, if you're religious, if you're not religious, if you believe in divine intervention or cosmic connection, whatever. It doesn't matter. something special happened last night. And for me personally, I feel like there might have been a little help. I don't know. I'm not saying that. I don't know. None of us know. But something happened. For those that confluence of events to come together. It was something special. So, yeah, I saw the last part of it, the last few innings last night. Just unbelievable.
It's great. Game of baseball, bringing, you know, people after a horrible tragedy, bringing people together. And, you know, it's never going to heal the soul, but
no,
it helps.
Yeah, it was a great moment. Great moment. And kudos to the Angels players and all the coaches and putting the jerseys on the mound after the game. It's just it's a great thing to do. Just
great tribute.
Awesome thing to do. All right, so we'll move a little bit. We'll flip a couple of topics over before we get to the 11 o'clock hour when we're going to talk all things Kansas with football coming up soon, basketball. Some of the former Jayhawks are having a pretty good summer camp, so we'll do that at 11. So we'll kick around a couple of other things. Chris, I'll throw it. Do you want to start NFL or NBA?
I think NFL just because there has been some relevant things, of course, happening with the 18-game schedule.
Yeah.
Being thrown out, as
yeah.
well as something within the division happening with the division opponent, and Melvin Gordon wanting a contract extension.
Okay, let's start there.
Big time money.
Because that's inside the division.
Yeah.
That's the Chargers. So let's start there. Melvin Gordon, great running back, don't get me wrong. But he wants a huge new deal. He's got 1 year left on his rookie contract, right? So he wants a big new deal. I get it. The guy puts up numbers. The Chargers are not the team to give in to demands. They just don't. Remember when Joey Bosa got drafted and Bosa was like, no, I'm not signing for draft slot money. And I don't want the standard rookie contract. I don't want that. And the Chargers let him sit. He missed, what, 4 or 5 games? They let him sit. The Chargers don't give in to demands. That's not what they, for good or bad, I thought they misplayed it with Bosa. Totally misplayed it with Joey Bosa. Not having him there for those games. Totally wrong. With Melvin Gordon, I don't give in on a running back. I'm sorry. I'm friends with guys who played running back in the National Football League. I don't overpay for the running back. We've done that before. We did it with Larry Johnson, and I'm friends with Larry Johnson. We did it with Jamal Charles, and I love Jamal Charles. Don't do it.
Especially in this day and age of NFL football with the running back seeming interchangeable in terms of how it fits schematically, you can find value in a cheap running back. And the Chiefs have shown that. Other teams in the league have shown that. Even when Melvin Gordon was hurt last year, Austin Eckler.
That's what I was going to say. Eckler was
great.
Great. They got another good running back on the team. I'm
also with the Broncos, Philip Lindsay.
Yep.
Who was undrafted.
Right.
You can find good value.
Right.
Depending on your scheme and how you scout.
If I'm Melvin Gordon's agent and I'm looking.
You have no leverage.
You have none. And you know how the Chargers deal with these things. They don't. They just don't. They're like the Steelers don't negotiate contracts in season. Maybe they've done it once or twice. I don't know. But they don't. The Chargers just that's not the way they operate. They don't want to get held up. They don't give in to demands. So if you're Melvin Gordon's agent, maybe the best advice you could give is play out this year and then see what happens. Now, in football, it's a different animal than any other sport because you can get injured pretty easily in the National Football League.
If this is going to be a problem for the Chargers, they could use him as trade bait as well. I mean, you could get some value for Melvin Gordon.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to get a new he's not going to get an extension, big money. I mean, he's not as durable as Ezekiel Elliott,
right?
Who is going to get paid a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
because he has shown that he can, even though he did have that suspension,
mm-hmm.
but he has shown that he is durable. He can take a beating and he can still perform.
He's not getting the Le'Veon Bell contract.
No, but in
of course,
another
the Jets
thing,
are idiots.
But yeah. I mean, in the last 4 years, Gordon has one 1,000 yard season, one 16 game season in 4 years, and one season of more than 4 yards per carry. So he is good.
Right.
And he has value with, you know, catching balls out of the backfield. But the production on the ground hasn't always been there.
Right. And I heard the fellas on the Border Patrol this week, Stephen St. John, Nate Bukate, and Jake Gutierrez, are encouraging Melvin Gordon. Hold out. Get your money, because we don't want to face you. We just don't. So, yeah. And if you want to trade him out of the division, I'd be good with that, too. I'd be very good with that. So, Melvin Gordon, I mean, good luck. I mean, we got our own issues here in Kansas City. We got Chris Jones. And I have not heard any movement on negotiations between Chris Jones and the Chiefs, basically because they don't have to. Everybody was gone last week, right? The whole league was off last week.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches are out of town. Front office guys are out of town. Players are out of town unless they live here. So there's been nothing on Chris Jones.
There's no talking.
No. And I'm fine. Look, if he misses a couple of weeks of training camp, not all that worried about it. We've seen this drama before. We don't see the drama like we used to. We don't see the long player holdouts that we used to. Like, you know, Larry Johnson held out for a long time. I'm trying to think of the last big one, if there's been one since then. But we don't see it a lot anymore. So if Chris Jones misses a week or two of training camp, fine. I'm good with that. The Chiefs are, you got a lot of money locked in right now to some guys. I mean, Frank Clark got the huge contract. Tyrann Mathieu's got a good contract. But you're going to have Patrick Mahomes coming right around the corner. If you want to keep Tyreek Hill, Tyreek Hill's coming right around the corner.
And obviously, if they didn't trade for Frank Clark, I think this deal is already done.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think Chris Jones, as I think we've talked about, is maybe a little, not upset, but disappointed that they gave a guy outside of the organization that kind of money when he was drafted and he came up through the Chiefs organization.
Yeah, I wouldn't be happy with that. By the way, and I've forgotten this, Jed Marshall just texted in. Appreciate it, Jed. Sometimes I get a brain freeze, and I was talking about the Larry Johnson holdout. Eric Berry and Justin Houston also held out of training camp.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thank you, Jed. I appreciate it. It's early on a Saturday. But yeah, I don't mind. I really don't mind if Chris Jones misses a week or two of training camp. It will not bother me at all. He's been in the league long enough. Now, I'd rather have him there working with Steve Spagnuolo and the coaching staff. I'd rather that be the case, but I'm not going to lose sleep over it if he's not there. And when he signs, he'll make his grand entrance and everybody will cheer.
Yeah, I mean, I just think more so to a lot of NFL organizations are more hesitant to dish out big money. Like Jadeveon Clowney still hasn't gotten a contract extension. He's holding out. He's probably going to have to play on the franchise tag, much like I'm assuming that's what's going to happen with Chris Jones this year, in my opinion at least. But who knows? We will see.
Yeah. The next collective bargaining agreement, the franchise tag and transition tags, should be at the top of close to the top of the list of things players want to get rid of. Because it kind of hamstrings them a little bit. All right, on that note, by the way, thank you once again to Jed Marshall. We'll take a quick timeout. You are listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. A little psychedelic. Who is this, Chris?
This is a guy named Mac DeMarco. He's from British Columbia, so he's from up in the...
Canada.
Canada. Can't even talk. Nice little chill vibe.
See, on the weekends when Jed was doing the show, he would always have a Simpsons reference at the ready, and I've watched it a ton, but I don't have the quick recall, but there was that episode where they were going to go to Canada. And they told Homer, well, we need to get passports. And he goes, passports? I'm like, yeah, you need a passport to get into Canada. It's a, you know, it's a foreign country. And he said, oh, I always thought it was America's hat.
That's pretty good.
Thought Canada was America's hat. Good stuff. All right, good show rolling so far. We had Seth Kizer on in hour number one talking Chiefs football ahead of training camp and some of the things he's looking forward to at training camp. He wants to watch... He wants to watch Okafor, because we were picking out players you want to watch that maybe are, you know, not the star players, not Patrick Mahomes, not Travis Kelce. I picked Juan Thornhill, the draft pick, the safety. He went with Okafor, the free agent signing from the Saints. So I thought that was interesting. If you missed that, it'll be up on the podcast later today at 810WHB.com. In the 10 o'clock hour, we had Max Reaper on from RoyalsReview.com, the first time we had him on the show. Good stuff, talking about Bubba Starling making his major league debut Friday night at Kauffman Stadium. Got a walk, scored a run, had a strikeout, a couple of ground balls out, ground ball outs, and then decent in the outfield except for when he tried to dive for one and it kind of glanced off his glove and it led to a run. But, you know,
I mean,
kids try. Kids hustling out there.
The thing is, I don't mind that as much because the guy was going to score anyways.
Yes.
So.
He was hustling.
Yeah.
Bubba's hustling. So if you missed Max Reaper and what to look for, also what to look for in the second half of the season, you can find that on the podcast page as well, 810WHB.com. Max with some good stuff there and looking at possible trades. And, you know, nobody's talking about Ian Kennedy because of the size of the contract. That money is spent.
Well, and the Royals are not, they don't want to eat money. Essentially, and that's how that trade is going to go down. I mean, they just haven't shown in the past that they want.
David Glass
doesn't want to pay a player that's not on.
Right, and it takes some mental gymnastics, I guess, where if you're the owner of the team, well, I'm not paying that guy to play for somebody else. But that money is spent. The contracts are guaranteed. There's nothing you can do to recoup that money. It ain't coming back. The checks are being printed right now, and they will keep getting printed. But can you get something for him? I would if I was a contender. You get him because if you trade him, the next team's only had to pay him the major league minimum. And this would be prorated for the second half of the season. So I think I think Ian Kennedy would be a target piece.
He's a guy that can go in for one, maybe two innings and pump gas. And he's shown that in this bullpen role that he's been pretty effective for the most part.
I don't hear the national guys talking about him, so maybe nobody's calling the Royals about Ian Kennedy, but I'd certainly have him on the list with, you know, Martin Maldonado, and you'd have to give a King's ransom to get Whit Merrifield, but, you know.
Jorge Soler,
possibly. Who knows? All right, we'll take a quick timeout. Coming up in hour number three, we're not done yet. We're going to speak with Matt Galloway from CJOnline.com and HawkZone.com. KU football season about ready to start. Basketball season is always a topic. So that's coming up next. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bullock is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.